I'm Mark Thomas, a retired union activist. Tune into the Access Hour Monday at 7 p.m. when I'll interview Mary Englem and Annie Havel about their experience as politically active working class women. Workers' history by people who lived it on the Access Hour Monday at 7 p.m. on WRT Madison. When we stand hand in hand, that's the power, that's the power that must rule in every land. One industrial union brand. Oh, would you have...
Melvin, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here.
Okay, we're live now.
Oh, I didn't hear the intro. Okay. Maybe you should signal me when it's time for me to come in, since I had some things I don't hear. Okay, Mending Wall by Robert Frost. Something there is that doesn't love a wall that sends the frozen ground swell under it and spills the upper bout boulders in the sun. And makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone. But they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made. But at spring mending time, we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill. And on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each. And some are loaves and some so nearly balls we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game, one on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine, and I am apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only, and the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says it again. Good fences make good neighbors. This is Radio Literature, and I'm Melvin Hinton. Welcome to another edition of Radio Literature. And last week, we ended with Robert Frost. We in this series of Poetry on Record, listening to poets actually recording their own, that is, reading their own poetry. And we've listened to several poets. We've been going chronologically, more or less. And we ended with Frost, Robert Frost, and we continue with Robert Frost today, or we start with Robert Frost. That was Mending Wall by Robert Frost. And I must say thanks to our engineer today, because Daniel MacArthur is away and Emmett Riley is filling in. Thank you so much, Emmett. Okay. So Robert Frost, as I think we said last week, was born in San Francisco, which seems odd to most of us who grew up almost idolizing Frost if we were poetry lovers, because Robert Frost is the quintessential New England poet. So how could he be born in San Francisco? But he was. But he did spend most of his life, as he grew and grew and got older, in New England. He has an interesting life and really a tragic life. Even though he lived long and wrote much poetry and was dearly loved by Americans, and mostly was the most admired poet for many men for decades. And he and his wife met in high school. When they graduated from high school at the same time, and they were co-valedictorians. Can you imagine that? After they graduated from high school, he asked her to marry him. She turned him down because she wanted to, she had just started college, and she wanted to finish college. Well, when she finished college, he asked her again, and this time she accepted, and they got married. But as I say, their lives were tragic. They had 6 children. 4 of them died very young. At least 3 of them died very young. One of them suffered from mental illness all her life. The other two, I'm not sure about, but I know at least one of them lived a long time, let's say, because I know that Frost did have a son. Let's listen to Frost reading his own poem, "The Road Not Taken."
Stopping by woods on a snowy evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep.
That was "Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening" by Robert Frost. And next we're going to listen to another poem, the previous one. But first let me say that Frost lived a long life. In his early years, he had a hard time getting his poetry published. For some reason, I don't know why, the magazines rejected his poems. He and his wife moved to England, where he had a very easy time with it. The English just published his poems one after another. He gained a reputation as an outstanding poet. They moved back to the United States, and now the Atlantic and other, it was called the Atlantic Monthly then, and other magazines that had rejected his poems now were seeking him out. Give us some of your poems to publish. And what Frost did was to give them the same poems they had rejected 20 years before, and they published them. So let's listen now to Robert Frost reading his poem, "The Road Not Taken."
Out of the people, yes, perhaps I could offer a...
No, that's not Frost. It's passage. It's the one before the one you just played. "The Road Not Taken." It's number 2.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that, the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
That was...
Stop.
That was Robert Frost, The Road Not Taken. It's interesting to note, I'll repeat this even though I said it last week, because I'm sure there are people listening tonight who weren't able to be with us last week. Frost, at the age of 86, was asked by John F. Kennedy to compose and recite a poem at his 1961 inauguration. Well, Frost wrote the poem, but when he got up to read it, his eyesight, of course, was failing at that time at 86, and there was a lot of sunlight, so he couldn't see the letters on the page. So he just recited a different poem that he already had memorized. I just thought that was an interesting anecdote. So that's Robert Frost. And let's go on to another quintessential American poet. At least that's how he's always been considered. And that is Carl Sandburg. Now, Carl Sandburg, although he was an accomplished poet and writer, he had a different, people thought of him very differently. Frost was thought of as being very academic and formal and very well educated, whereas Carl Sandburg seemed very folksy, although he was quite well educated himself, but he had a different way of presenting himself. Carl Sandburg was born in Galesburg, Illinois, and he belonged to what we might consider a typical working-class family of the 19th century. They weren't dirt poor, but they weren't wealthy, or they're far from being wealthy. As the poets that we've mentioned so far in our series, we've seen there were some who, of course, were British, but the Americans generally were first or second generation Americans. They were the children or the grandchildren of people who had come from Europe and other parts of the world to become Americans. Now, Sandburg, his parents were Swedish immigrants, and they settled in Galesburg, Illinois. His father worked in Chicago as a blacksmith's assistant. He assisted a blacksmith in his work. And Charlie, as Carl Sandburg was called at that time by his family, was the second of seven children. And Sandburg was born in 1878. He graduated from the eighth grade, which was an accomplishment in those days. Very, very few people finished high school in those days, let alone went to college. So in many states at that time, and even much later, if you had an eighth grade diploma, you could teach elementary school. You could be an elementary school teacher. Carl Sandburg did many things in his life. He had so many different jobs. He delivered milk. He harvested ice. He laid bricks. He threshed wheat. He shined shoes. He traveled around the United States principally in around 1897 as a hobo. So he learned a lot about the country that he was part of. And he saw this big gap, this real difference, contrast in the way the poor lived and the way the rich lived. And he became, at an early age, as a young man, he became an enemy of capitalism. Let's listen to Carl Sandburg read his poem, or recite it, From the People, Yes.
Out of the people, yes, perhaps I could offer a passage that consists entirely of proverbs, some of them older than the alphabet, others as recent, as modern as the oxygen tent, the bombing plane, the vacuum cleaner, the CIO, the sit-down strike, and the mediation board. The people, yes. The people pause for breath, for wounds and bruises to heal, for food again, after war, after famine. The people is a monolith, a mover, a dirt farmer, a desperate hoper. The prize liar comes saying, I know how, listen to me, I'll bring you through. The guesser comes saying, the way is long and hard, and maybe what I offer will work out. The people choose, and the people's choice, more often than not, is one more washout. Yet the strong man, the priceless one who wants nothing for himself and has his roots among his people, comes often enough for the people to know him and to win through into gains beyond later losing. Comes often enough so the people can look back and say, we have come far and we will go farther yet. The people is a trunk of patience. A monolith. What is history but a few big names plus people? What is a big name unless the people love it or hate it for what it did to them or for them while it was in the going? And this big name means pretense and plunder, ashes and dung, while another is armfuls of roses enshrined beyond speech. You may call spirits from the vasty deep. Aye, you may. But will they come when you call them? You may sell an idea to the people and sit back satisfied you have them your way, but will they stay sold on the idea? Will they be easy to hold in line unless the idea has a promise of roots twisted deep in the heart of man, being brought into play as though justice between man and man may yet breeze across the world with sea smells and a very old, a very plain homemade cry. Why didn't we think of this before?
So. Okay. So that was Carl Sandburg, and of course, since I was just saying that he was an enemy of capitalism, he became an enemy of capitalism as a young man after traveling around the country as a hobo and seeing how the poor people lived. So he was more and more concerned with the condition of American workers. And something I had no idea about, I just found out this from Wikipedia, that Carl Sandburg in 1907 worked as an organizer for the Wisconsin Social Democratic Party. I wonder what happened to that party. At the headquarters in Milwaukee, guess who he met? He met Lillian Steichen, who became his wife the following year. Sandburg became known nationally, of course, but internationally, because he not only he worked as a journalist and all those other odd jobs that I just mentioned. Even before that, he worked as a journalist. He became well known. He apparently was a good writer, even though I haven't read any of his journalism. And he became known around the world. Sandburg was asked to write a children's book about Abraham Lincoln. And he worked on this book, researched and wrote it. It took him 3 years. And of course, when it was finished, it was not a children's book. It was a two-volume biography of Abraham Lincoln, published in 1926. Years later, he published four more volumes of this biography of Abraham Lincoln. And the last four volumes won the Pulitzer Prize for him. I'm not sure if it was the whole, maybe it's for the whole, all six volumes. He won the Pulitzer Prize in 1940. He also performed folk songs. When he was asked to speak in all of the world, he would not only speak, but he would sing folk songs that he had collected and he was known for singing those songs. He also published an autobiography, and his complete poems won him a second Pulitzer Prize in 1951. And Carl Sandburg is one of those poets who are considered the Chicago poets. And another one of my favorites, is Gwendolyn Brooks. But Carl Sandburg is loved by Chicago and is a part of Chicago history. And now let's listen to the former mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, and we're still on the subject of Carl Sandburg.
Chicago has always had the build of a big city with the heart of a small town. I believe in our city because I know who we are and what we're made of. The pride of every ethnic, religious, and economic background, and nearly 3 million strong. Our parents and our grandparents came not just to any city. They came to America City. They came to Chicago. Mayor Rahm Emanuel, Carl Sandburg selected poems. I know it comes as a shock to you, but we're gonna read Chicago. Hog butcher for the world. Toolmaker, stacker of wheat. Player with railroads and the nation's freight handler. Stormy, husky, brawling. City of big shoulders. They tell me you are wicked, and I believe them. For I have seen your painted women under the gas lamps luring the farm boys. And they tell me you are crooked, and I answer, yes. It is true I have seen the gunmen kill and go free to kill again. And they tell me you are brutal. And my reply is, on the faces of women and children, I have seen the marks of wanton hunger. And having answered so, I turn once more to those who sneer at this, my city. And I give them back the sneer and say to them, come and show me another city with lifted head, singing so proud to be alive, and coarse and strong and cunning, flinging magnetic curses amid the toil of piling job on job. Here is a tall, bold slugger set vivid against the little soft cities. Fierce as a dog with tongue lapping for action, cunning as a savage pitted against the wilderness, bareheaded, shoveling, wrecking, planning, building, breaking, rebuilding, under the smoke, dust all over his mouth, laughing with white teeth. Under the terrible burden of destiny, laughing as a young man laughs. Laughing even as an ignorant fighter laughs who has never lost a battle. Bragging and laughing that under his wrist is the pulse and under his ribs, the heart of the people. Laughing. Laughing the stormy, husky, brawling laughter of youth. Half naked, sweating, proud to be hog butcher, tool maker, stacker of wheat, player with railroads and freight handler of the nation. Chicago. Carl Sandburg.
That was Rahm Emanuel reading Chicago by Carl Sandburg. And I had always thought of that poem's title as Hog Butcher to the World. At some time in the past, many years ago, I might have known it was called Chicago, but I don't remember that. I thought the title was Hog Butcher to the World. Anyway, that's one of his very famous poems. And just to give you an idea of how famous and how much admired Carl Sandburg was around the world, not just in the United States. On February 12, 1959, the Congress commemorated the 150th anniversary of Abraham Lincoln's birth. The Congress met in a joint session, the House of Representatives and the Senate, to hear the actor Frederick March give a dramatic reading of the Gettysburg Address. But the main address after Frederick March had finished was a speech by Carl Sandburg. Can you imagine that? Carl Sandburg invited by the whole Congress, Senate and the House of Representatives, to speak to them. Sandburg supported the civil rights movement. He was the first white man to be honored by the NAACP with their Silver Plaque Award, and he was called a major prophet of civil rights in our time. When Carl Sandburg died in 1967, President Lyndon Johnson observed, "Carl Sandburg was more than the voice of America, more than the poet of its strength and genius. He was America." Can you imagine that? Somebody saying that about a poet? We have in our day, nobody has ever said that about Maya Angelou. So that's as close as you'll get in our day. But you can imagine now how important poets were in those days. Carl Sandburg, Robert Frost, and others. And we're almost through, but I'm going to read a poem by our next poet. And at some time in the future, we will continue with this series of poets on record. So this poet is Wallace Stevens. And the poem is "The Emperor of Ice Cream." I remember this poem when I was in college. I had a roommate one year who in his English class. Their assignment was to read the poem, "The Emperor of Ice Cream." He couldn't make heads or tails of it. I read it. I couldn't make heads or tails of it either. I never found out what the instructor had said in class the next day. Anyway, Wallace Stevens, "The Emperor of Ice Cream." "Call the roller of big cigars, the muscular one, and bid him whip in kitchen cups concupiscent curds. Let the wenches dawdle in such dress as they are used to wear, and let the boys bring flowers in last month's newspapers. Let be finale of seam. The only emperor is the emperor of ice cream. Take from the dresser of deal, lacking the three glass knobs, that sheet on which she embroidered fantails once, and spread it so as to cover her face. If her horny feet protrude, they come to show how cold she is and dumb. Let the lamp affix its beam. The only emperor is the emperor of ice cream." Wallace Stevens, "The Emperor of Ice Cream." And for those of you who've never heard of Wallace Stevens before, you can look him up because there's a lot to know about him. And that's all I can say because our time is up. Thanks again to our engineer filling in for our regular engineer, Emmett Riley. And please join us next week. Next week, we have some very special guests for you. So I'll see you again next week on Radio Literature.
We are listener-sponsored community radio. Join us again next Thursday at 7:30 for more features of local, national, and international interest. Listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
you love and just let yourself unwind. She says she knows the sunflower bells melting on. Bring it down, 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 right to the ground.